colony, joined, became an adjunct to the Plymouth plantation colony.
This was all Plymouth plantation. In the 1680s, around there, they joined the Massachusetts Bay and became the state of Massachusetts, the province of Massachusetts Bay.
In 1680?
Somewhere, I don't know.
69, I think it's something 86 or 84.
I have quite a little on the Waite family.
You do?
Yeah, well, I don't carry around my head. You'd have to read it.
I'd read it. This is from the Waite family by D. Byron Waite. Ralph de Waite, son of Ralph, an Englishman, by a Welsh woman who married Emma, sister to Roger, Earl of Hereford, a cousin of William the Conqueror, who gave him in 1075 the earldom, city, and castle of Norwich, England. For a few generations, we find the name variously spelled, W-A-E-T, W-A-T-E, W-A-I-G-H-T, W-A-Y-G-H-T, W-A-Y-T-E, and Richardus de Waite of the county of Warwick, who was in 1315 exchequer of counties of Ralph. Therefore, the name was written W-A-Y-T-E almost exclusively until the different ones of the name came to New England, when that was discarded, and Waite or Waite, W-A-I-T, or W-A-I-T was used. The earliest settlers of the name in New England were Richard Gamaliel, is that the way you pronounce it?
Yes.
And Thomas of Ipswich, Benjamin of Hatfield, and John of Windsor, Connecticut, and George of Providence, Rhode Island, all of whom arrived in New England previously to 1664, the posterity of whom all claim to be descendants of Ricardus. One kindred, though distant, was freely disturbed over the central position of southern England, extending thence to northern Wales, the land from whence old progenitors came to the New World, and often in this response to our inquiries of these of the same name, here we receive the same reply, showing that tradition, which investigation proves to be a fact, has handed down well that portion of our history, that we descended from the three brothers who came from Wales. Ricard, the eldest, was born in 1596, Gamaliel in 1598, and Thomas in 1601, and they came to Boston in 1634. The same year, the ballot box was used in the colony, and Richard was at one time marshal there. They were cousins of Thomas Waite, W-A-Y-T-E, who was a member of Parliament and one of the judges who signed the warrant in 1649 for the execution of Charles I. The late Morrison Remick Waite, the chief of the Supreme Court, traced his line through Henry Matson, Remick, and three Thomases, Thomas Waite, the regicide, so on.
Mary, I'm going to interrupt you now because I'm so terribly interested in the Hickses.
In what?
The Hickses.
In the Hickses?
I want to know all about you. And the Hickses.
Well, this is one of the Hickses, Joseph Elizabeth Waite, lived to be 100. She's buried down here.
So the Waites and the Hickses are related.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Quite close.
So I'm not really, I shouldn't have interrupted you. But maybe I thought in your own words you could tell me a little bit about
this. I copied this a long time ago, yes.
Could, in your own words, could you tell me a little bit about the history and all that? And
well,
your relationship to it?
Robert Hicks came from London in the ship Fortune, the fall of 1621.
That was a year after the Mayflower, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he went to a church in South Park, which was a separatist church near the London Bridge on Bermondsey Street. He was a partner of one Briggs, Christopher Briggs, in the tannery business.
Now this was in England.
Yes, and they had a depression, and he came over. He married, and he was 40 years of old age. At one of Staten Island, he came to Plymouth, the ship Fortune, same one at Philip Delano. Ancestor of President.
Yes. And he's related to, what is his relationship to Stephen Delano? Any?
They're related.
Yes.
The Hickses didn't have to do with the Delano.
No, but he, they.
Philip Delano came to Duxbury, and I think there are still Delanos living in Duxbury. And I saw Philip Delano's grave in South Duxbury. John Alden's buried. So.
John Alden's buried in Duxbury.
Yeah, well, Philip Delano's buried not far away. And
their Hicks is there too.
No, not there.
No, I'm trying to get to the Hickses.
Well, Robert Hicks died in Plymouth, and as far as I know, he's buried down near that canopy. See, the first cemetery was down near the shore there.
Yeah.
And when they created that park, they dug the bones up and put them in that canopy. As far as I know, they're still there. Mm-hmm. But they don't know.
Yeah.
They list the names of people that they were able to find out. But I'm pretty sure that Robert is buried there. Because his house is nearby. At the top of the north.
Yes.
At the foot of Leiden Street.
Yeah.
On a side lane is called Carver Lane after Governor Carver.
Yes. Now, which Hicks first came to Westport?
Well, he had a son, Samuel, who went to East Ham on the Cape. He married a Doan. Reverend Doan is buried down here. And then...
Down at the point?
No, down in East Ham.
Oh, down in East Ham.
I lived at Nauset, near the Nauset Light.
Yes.
And you can inspire the National Seashore.
She was fined for attending Quaker meetings.
So they were asked...
Oh, really? Yes.
They were asked to leave Plymouth. Yes. And they went down and married this Reverend Doan's daughter. And they stayed there a while, and then Dartmouth was opened up for settlement. And they came to...
Do you know when Dartmouth was opened up for settlement?
Well, about... you see, they purchased it from the Indians. And, about the... 1640. See, Dartmouth incorporated in 1664. Mm-hmm. So he came to what is now East Bay Haven, on the, what is now known as Shaw's Hole at Mattapoisett Neck. And had a farm there on the brook. And they had an Indian reservation at Mattapoisett Neck, and he had trouble with the Indians, Samuel did. And the Indian.
No, these were the Wassenaugs still, way out there.
Well, I see what the Pilgrims did. They herded these Indians into various reservations. They had one at Freetown, and they had one at Mattapoisett Neck, it was known as Daphne's Gore. And mostly it's a voiceless land, and Samuel Hicks happened to have the only water supply the Indians had, so naturally he had arguments with them. And he only had the only good fishing hole available. And so he was wounded, and I guess eventually he was an infant for years. And
did he have a family, a wife, and children?
Yeah, it's Joseph. We don't have a list of all his children because the early records of that have been destroyed.
Yeah.
He had a son, Joseph, and he went to Portsmouth, which was then opened up, and he was a carpenter over there. And he built a house over there for the Earl family. And he put in the raised paneling. And for that he received 100 acres of land on the westernmost arm of the Coxit River. There was an old cellar hole down here that they built a house about 1702.
But this is where the 100 acres of land was.
Yes.
Right here on the main road.
All that's left now is 21 acres. It once included Mr. Burkett's farm and John S. Braden's farm. And the cove down here was known as Hicks Cove. Of course, I have a map. Earlier than that was known as Earl's Cove, after the Earl family.
What is the date of your map? I have three or four early maps.
I have the American Neptune series of the British Admiralty maps. This is a reproduction. I have it upstairs.
Yes. I'd love to sometime make a tracing of it or something.
Yeah. We had a publishing company, Barry, that Barry Publishers. They've gone out of business now. He reproduced a lot of these early maps. He obtained most of them from the American Antiquarian Society because he was an officer there, and he was a printer by trade, and he reproduced a lot of these old histories and so on. And he reproduced the American Neptune. So.
Yes. All right, now let's see. Where are we with the Hickses?
Well, Joseph Hicks built this house here, and then he got a job.
When was it built, did you say? You told us.
Well, roughly around 1700. Mm-hmm. And then he got a job with George Cadman, who lived in Portsmouth. He was also an early proprietor of that. Mm-hmm. And he owned Cadman's Neck.
Yeah.
And that house over there is now known as the Handy House, was the Cadman House.
Oh, it is? According to Eleanor Tripp's records, a Mr. White built the Handy House. And gave it to his daughter when she married.
Well,
and the Cadmans came later on then. Mr. White may have sold it to the Cadmans?
No, I think the Cadmans are here first.
You do?
Yes. Because Cadman hired Joseph Hicks to build in four flat boats for a ferry.
Oh, we're thinking of Handy Hill. Are you thinking of Dr. Handy's house, or are you thinking of the Red House that was the...
Well, that Red House was built by
Joseph Hicks,
too, about 1712.
Mm-hmm.
And... Whites, I don't know whether the Whites came along later.
I see.
They're descendants of Peregrine White.
They're Mayflower descendants. You know, I wondered something. Remember, have you ever gone to the dump?
Oh, yes.
I've been there.
Two or three years ago, there was a little man who somehow or other was, well, he has a farm up on Adamsville Road, I think it is, or is it Charlotte White Road?
I think it's Charlotte.
On Charlotte White Road, who worked in the dump. And he used to give me beautiful big heads of lettuce.
Oh, yeah. That's Mr. Hancock.
It is Mr. Hancock. So
I don't know why he's related to
his wife, though. His wife is, but his wife is not living with him. And she comes to meeting, and that is the Quaker meeting at Central Village. And I think she uses the name White. White.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. See, Charlotte White was a native girl.
I know.
So
she was a midwife, wasn't she? Or she was a...
Well, she was a descendant of a slave. That's all I know about. Mm-hmm. See, they had slaves here in Westport, and there are several slave cemeteries.
Yes. Where are they located?
Westport News right mentions one up on the Alamy farm. I guess they had slaves in the early days. The family still takes care of it. They're just field stones.
Yes.
It's down almost to the beach. Off, and there's a road that goes off to Vanish Joy, and I think it's there. Just got field stones. Mm-hmm. And then there are, I think, the slave cemeteries up on Sodom Road. I don't know just where they are. Was it Palmer?
What?
Mr. Palmer up here, what's his first
name? Oscar Palmer?
Oscar Palmer.
Palmer.
He knows a lot about women.
Yes. I'm going to
tape
him. I want to see him about something. That's
well, I suggest, I don't know how well he is now, but he knows a lot of the early history.
Yes.
Oh, yes, he's very good.
Yes, very
he's good on
the
history up there, but all he knows in this area.
You don't know, for instance, I wouldn't even begin to ask you anything about the head or the factory village or anything like that.
Well, I think you'll find it.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
I don't believe that your book is the same as mine. I think yours is thicker than mine.
There's several editions. See, this is one of the earlier ones.
I see. Mine is probably
a
later edition.
Yeah.
This was a...
Well, this tells us
history.
Actually, when I call it mine, I mean it's Teresa Gifford.
Yeah.
She had it?
Yes, and she loaned it to me.
Oh, yes. This one was given to my uncle, my father's brother.
Of course, these Giffords come from Sandwich,
The Giffords come from Sandwich, too.
Spring Hill Road. You've been down to Sandwich?
Yes. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you look at, there's the East Sandwich Quaker Church. There's an older church.
I've been through it.
This is 1883.
Yeah, well, there's another site where the earlier meet was down on Spring Hill Road. And I went down there. You can still see a few bricks and so on. But,
all right, let's get right back now to that.
Well,
Drift Road and the Hicks Bridge and...
All right, well... Joseph Hicks built that's not ours. Joseph Hicks built ran this ferry for Cadman. He built that house. And it's referred to in the deed as a house by the Sedge Flat. There used to be a marsh out there a few years ago. The fellow dug it away. Or he called it a sedge flat. And that's the old English term for just a marsh. And as I said, he built four flatboats. And then he had in his inventory, he mentions chains and so on. Probably had a chain ferry. The way they operated was
this is Joseph Hicks.
You'd have the chain, pull it across with the chain. The tide would move the poles if you set it at an angle. You had to change the angle. went across, and the tide would take you across the full flatboat. He also had a carry-all of people that wanted to sit down. The others were for wagons.
When was that? Have you any? When was that built?
Well, yeah, the ferry was operated from roughly around 1680 to around the 1730s. And then William Hicks, the son of Joseph, built the first bridge. And the way he built it was to, he took two flatboats and built a pier on it, two more, and they had two piers and then sharp bridges in between. That was Hicks's bridge. And that stood from 1738 to 1938, when the state took over and built the present bridge. When they excavated, it was in the paper that they found the remains of these flatboats.
Now, when they wanted to bring down, they built whaleboats up in at the head, you know, as well as here.
Yeah.
And they came down the river. Did they come on Drift Road, or did they come on the river?
See, the bridge was built in such a way that the boats could, between Hicks's house, there was a low place, and they had a carry around the end of the bridge, and they could put the boats on rollers and just roll them around, because it wasn't a drawbridge. See,
they could put the boats and roll them around on the Drift Road, or
on the Hicks Bridge.
On the Hicks Bridge.
But they did it around the end of the bridge instead of going under the bridge. They went around the end of the bridge.
I see.
And if you go up there, you'll notice it's quite a bit lower, and it would be very easy to do.
Yes.
And some of the dirt of the bridge was, the deeds mention a gorge, well, about a little north of the bridge, the place has all been dug out, and that's probably why they got the dirt building.
Yes. Now you see, one of my good friends is Elaine and Stevens. The Stevens live in a house that's quite recent, but it goes right down to the river right there, across from the early. They're right on the bridge at this end of the bridge on the north side. Across from the red house.
On the north side, this place has all been dug out. And this William Hicks evidently dug it out to make the fill for the bridge. And in the deed, one of these, it mentions the spreading oak. And it still is enormous oak, at least the last time I went up.
I have to go and look at it.
Well, it's,
we ought to get a picture of it.
The spreading oak is north of this gorge, as you call it. It's just a dugout place.
Yeah.
But that's probably loaded the stuff.
It might even be on the Stevens property, which
well,
is a it goes right down into a kind of a gorge.
Well, it's referred to as a gorge in the deeds. It's just an excavation.
Yeah. But they tried hard to make it.
That's when that was built, then. Then they charged the toll, and then the town took over the bridge about 1870 or so, and then the state had it after.
Now, Mary, did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, I don't know what to.
Well,
I was going to tell the history of this place.
Yes, this is. I'm terrible.
The bridge was. The reason I found this out, the bridge was included in this property until several generations, and then it was separate.
Now, that's about the history of this place, this house we're in.
Well, Ralph,
she wants to know about Captain Barney Hicks was a descendant of this Joseph before the Revolution. He had a sloop, and he traded with the West Indies. Went to Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, and he sailed for Christopher Champlin in Newport, who owned a rum distillery over there, and he kept him supplied with molasses. he would go to Africa with rum to the mouth of Congo and trade the rum for slaves. The slaves were brought to Santo Domingo, and then the molasses was brought from Santo Domingo up to Newport to make rum. This is the triangle of trade.
Yes. Now, where did Hicks come into this?
Well, he owned the sloop, and he sailed.
He was one of the suppliers,
yeah.
And he brought back slaves on his sloop.
To San Domingo, as far as I know, most of the slaves went to San Domingo, and all he brought to Newport was the molasses to make the rum. And that supplied all the taverns.
Now, about this house, he...
The profits of that in 1786, somewhere, he built this house after the Revolution. Now, the first part of the house sponsored it cost $1,000.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's oak frame, but the boards might have come from Maine or something. Because at that time they were getting them from Eastport, Maine.
I see.
And this part of the house was added about 1840 or something. Each generation is added a little to it.
Well, that's the way our house is.
Well, the L out back, I think, it might have come from Joseph Hicks' house down here. It has a feather edge paneling in it. So that was probably moved up and attached onto this. This house was originally designed to have two short L's, but they never did that. They made one big L.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's a big blank space on the end. And the windows are close together.
Imagination is good.
Well, all right, I found the foundation for the other L. I never put it on.
Well, I was reading a book about, it's by a man named Demos, D-E-M-O-S, called The Old Commonwealth. The Old Commonwealth. And it's about us, Dartmouth, Plymouth, and it's all back in the 1600s.
Yeah.
And it tells about the construction of the first houses, which were simply Waddle and Daub. The first winter they came over, all they could do was just get something to cover, keep the weather out.
Yeah.
And then they began to build small one-roomed houses, and they called them that main room. And the little room was about 16 by 20 in most cases, and they called it the hall. And that hall had a big fireplace, and it had to serve as bedroom, dining room, everything.
Yeah.
And then they began putting an addition on, which they called the L. Then later on, some of the houses, as the people became a little bit richer, had two L's.
Well, see, you see them over Newport now. In this area, they had these large houses with two short L's in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And in a few instances, this was carried out, but a lot of times it wasn't. And of course, they had these builder's manuals. They were developed mostly over Newport, and people here just copied this prevailing style of Newport. And in Newport, you get a complete evolution of construction, and it applies to this area as well as Newport.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're doing so much restoration in Newport now.
Yeah, but it's still continuing. See, Newport's one of the places that has the largest number of there's something like 600 or 800 from that period. And not many places. The only other place I've ever seen like that is like Newburyport or Portsmouth, New Hampshire. But unfortunately, most of them have been destroyed.
By the Indians.
People.
And people not caring.
Well, see, in Newport, what happened, the Negroes lived in a lot of them, and it got pretty well run down. They are doing quite a job.
Mary, what did you have there that you were going to say?
Well,
Read.
This was about this place.
Yes.
Well, I have, this gives a little background. The children of Ralph, and the first Earl, Ralph Earl, and Joanne, she was a savage Earl, her name was Savage, their children were Mary Earl, who married William Coley, and Martha Earl married William Wood, and Sarah Earl married Thomas Cornell, and William married Mary Walker, and Ralph married Dorcas Sprague, and married second Prudence. And then this Ralph Earl II, Ralph Earl I, son of Ralph and Mary Joanne Earl, married before 1659 Dorcas, daughter of Francis and Lydia Sprague of Duxbury, Mass, and died probably in 1716 as letters of administration were granted to his son John on January 6, 1717. On October 26, 1659, Francis Sprague of Duxborough conveyed to his son-in-law, Ralph Earl of Rhode Island, R-O-A-D, one half share of land in Cokeset and a cushioner in the jurisdiction of Plymouth. Sprague had his title to the land from the Indians for Samaquin and Wamsutta. This is this land.
Yes. In other words, your land was deeded
by
one Wamsutta.
And then this is
along with all the rest of the land.
Samaquin is another name for Massasoit. These Indians had several names. See, and Wamsutta was his son.
At first he named an
Irish. Wamsutta was the son of Massasoit.
Yeah, and Philip was the other son.
And he's the one who was angry that, whereas
Wamsutta
and Massasoit were friendly.
Yes. So King Philip was the one that started.
And then this is the deed to the Hicks homestead in Westport. William Earl II, son of Ralph and Joanne, Ralph I and Joanne Earl, deeds to Joseph Hicks, March 28, 1702, 100 acres of land on eastward edge of land bought of brother Ralph II Earl, late of Dartmouth, in consideration of a dwelling house built and finished by John Hicks, now of Portsmouth, Rhode Island.
That's fascinating.
And the witness was Stephen Allen, and recorded August 6, 1703. Well, that's the deed to this place here, and that's one of them. And
could I ask you a question about another question about the Earls? I am so sorry that I didn't have a tape, and we used to take Will Brightman for a ride every Sunday afternoon, and he has a little book. He had a little book, and I'm sure one of the Earls has it now. He had this little book which he'd go through each Sunday with us and tell about the people who were in his family or Hannah's family. And I don't know. I thought Will was going to live forever, I guess. But he was related to the Earls. Do you know anything about the Brightman family?
Yeah.
Some. I used to know him. He used to work for us.
Yes.
Well,
do you have any idea which houses here in Westport were built by Will?
Well, most of them around the point.
He built a great many of them, especially for Dr. Holt, the recent years.
Yes, that's recent. Mm. But I was thinking of when he was a young man.
He learned the trade himself, I think.
I can remember years ago. He didn't build Holt. how much the last 20 years or so of his life. Because most of the time he was just repairing. And then when he got along in years, he started building out. He built that house. She built a house for Priscilla. R.H. Fish owns it now.
Opposite the art group place on the other side. Yeah. In a little bit.
But years ago, he was a plumber and everything else, but he never built them. And
did all kinds of jobs.
Yeah. Well, you know, he plumbed our house.
What?
And he did the plumbing in our house.
Oh, yeah.
And he helped. He did the restoration. Whatever restoration was done in our house was done by Will.
Yeah. He shingled this house and he did.
He repaired this house.
Yes. Some. This house, this room wasn't finished off. It's just like the carpenter shop above the upstairs.
The room upstairs isn't finished.
And the beams, and I think some of it was taken from the old house.
Yeah.
Somebody down the hill. Did you remember John Babcock?
No, he
made miniature furniture. You've seen his furniture.
Yes. I want to find out about that because I wish we could have photographs at least of it for the exhibit.
You want
wish we could have photographs at least
quite a lot of it.
You have?
Yes. He used to live down the hill and he knew us very well.
It isn't here, is it? Something
I've got some of it here.